The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Morning, Glory America. Bonjour, hi, Canada. Hugh Hewitt live from the West Coast on this Thursday. Reuters, latest headlines in the hour. Russia getting bogged down in Ukraine, Western nations say. Russian forces in Ukraine are blasting cities and killing civilians, but no longer making progress on the ground. Western countries said on Thursday a war in Moscow was thought to have, hoped to have won within days, entered its fourth week. Hundreds are feared buried after Russia destroys Mariupol Theater, serving as a shelter. Clearly marked, there are pictures all over the web of this theater in which children are being housed, along with adult caretakers, has been reduced to rubble. It's a war crime. There are going to be hundreds of people dead inside of this drama theater. Russia purposely destroyed the drama theater where 100 people are hiding, Mariupol City Authority said in a statement on Telegram. Officials posted a photo of the building whose middle part was completely destroyed, with thick white smoke rising from the rubble. Officials said a bomb was dropped on this building from an airplane. It's impossible to find any words to describe this level of cynicism and cruelty with which Russian invaders are destroying peaceful residents of a Ukrainian city by the sea, the official statement read. The Times of Israel has a story on this horrific situation. Mass graves, hunger, nowhere is safe. Besieged Mariupol descends into despair and agony. It begins. It's an AP story. The bodies of the children all lie here, dumped into this narrow trench, hastily dug in the frozen earth of Mariupol to the constant drumbeat of shelling. There's an 18-month-old Kirill, whose shrapnel wound to the head proved too much for the little toddler's body. There's 16-year-old Ilya, whose legs were blown off in an explosion during a soccer game at a school field. There's a girl no older than six who wore the pajamas with cartoon unicorns, among the first of Mariupol's children to die from a Russian shell. They are stacked together with dozens of others in a mass grave on the outskirts of the city. Russia disgusts me. The officers who ordered this are war criminals. Putin is a war criminal. Putin's a sociopath. The man is crazy and indifferent to anything you say or do, and you can't believe a word that he says. That comes back later in the storyboard. Ukraine mounts a counteroffensive to drive Russians back from Kyiv and key cities. This is in the Wall Street Journal. Ukraine said its military has launched a counteroffensive in its capital, Kyiv, and other key cities, as President Zelensky urged the United States Congress to provide more weapons and increase economic pressure on the United States. I'm sure many of you watched President Zelensky yesterday. Later, after the address, Senator Tom Cotton, who had been on the show in the morning, appeared on Fox with Harris Faulkner and said this, cut number one.
Unfortunately, the sanctions haven't stopped the fighting. It would have been much better to start these sanctions weeks or months ago. Again, this is another example of President Biden being on the back foot, not wanting to take any action that might offend any of our allies in Europe, hoping that he could somehow dissuade Vladimir Putin from invading when he had 200,000 troops on Ukraine's border. That time has passed. We need to focus on the here and now. We need to throw the kitchen sink at Moscow and these sanctions. But more importantly, we need to get these weapons to the front lines. You know what will stop Russian aircraft and Russian missiles? S-300 air defense systems, not sanctions on Russian politicians, as appropriate as those are. It's time for the White House to quit dragging its feet and send everything that shoots to every Ukrainian that can arm it or that can carry those arms.
Very well put, Senator Cotton. Leader of the House Republicans, Kevin McCarthy, at a press conference said this, cut number two.
I thought President Zelensky was very powerful, as many of you watched. He made the case very strongly. When you think about what President Biden should do, I think there's a bipartisan movement right here. Provide them the MiGs. Provide them the planes where they can create a no-fly zone. Provide them the armament that they need to continue to fight a war that they did not create. I thought the video was one of the most moving moments in there. made the case of the murdering of innocent people, that war crimes are being committed, that America and the world cannot sit by and ignore. We need to put a stop to this. And I think greater pressure, greater armament, and why the MiGs were not provided weeks ago, as many of us requested, put them at a disadvantage.
Is there any scenario where a no-fly zone, the no-fly zone that he requested, would be supported by you and by the United States?
Look, I think right now, provide them the MiGs that they can create a no-fly zone. The entire time speaking with those in Ukraine and the president himself, he's never asked for American men or women to be in a battle. All he's ever asked for is give us the opportunity to defend ourselves. Don't let us fight with sticks. I've had conversations with the president long before this moment came. My advice to him was provide them the armament earlier to deter Putin from ever making this decision. And the entire time, President Biden always said it would be the sanctions after. And then when the sanctions came, he said it'd take months to work. Well, the Ukrainian people cannot wait months. The world cannot wait months and we sit by and watch innocent people being murdered.
Senator John Kennedy was on Fox with Sean Hannity last night, cut number 24.
Well, I'd make a couple of points, Sean. First, I think it's clear that the leader of the free world is President Zelensky. He and the Ukrainian people are tough as a boot, and we need to have their back. Point two, I think it's important when we do something right to acknowledge it. The West's sanctions on Russia's central bank has hurt Putin. Hadn't brought him to his knees, but it's hurt him. So I suppose you could say President Biden has gotten it right once in a row. Point three, the rest of President Biden's economic response to the invasion and military response to the invasion, in my judgment, has been a wimp fest. Let's take it first militarily. President Zelensky and the Ukrainian people are holding their own on the ground. They need air cover. Today, President Zelensky said, can you please help me get planes? Can you please help me get surface-to-air missiles? I'm not asking for American planes or pilots or troops. Help me with your allies. President Biden's response is the same as it always is. I'll get back to you in 3 to 5 business days. And he never.
Yeah, you know, John Kennedy is so right on. They should just give that man a cable show. Former Secretary of State Mike Pompeo also appearing with Sean Hannity last night, cut number 23.
No, Sean, I think that's right. Those two models were very consistent. They were speak pretty softly, but when it was time to swing into action, you did it with full force. You weren't late. You weren't behind. You weren't slow. You were protecting America's interest everywhere you went in your opening. You talked about the moral imperative to do this. I think President Zelensky talked about that eloquently today. But there's an important American set of interests here as well that we need not forget, right? The American economy is going to be impacted by this. Fertilizer, food, oil and gas, all going to be more expensive because the Biden administration put climate change ahead of protecting sovereignty and freedom in this place. I think you have it right. We should be providing all the tools that the Ukrainian people need to defend themselves. We have them. The Europeans have them. They can do an awful lot more, too. But instead, President Biden has been behind. He's allowed Vladimir Putin to dictate the pace and the response. He's allowed Vladimir Putin to dominate how we think about the structure of what's taking place here. And we can do better than this. Americans deserve it. The Ukrainian people deserve it as well. And I think President Zelensky spoke to that very, very nicely today.
Secretary Pompeo was praising the model established by Presidents Reagan and Trump. Pete Struzstrank. Back to the Wall Street Journal. A Ukrainian town deals Russia one of the war's most decisive routes. This story, published at about 11:37 yesterday at the Wall Street Journal, details how Russia tried to roll into the strategic southern town. Let me get this town right. Voznesensk. 35,000 people. 35,000 people rose up and they destroyed a Russian column. They forced them back. They had retreated 30 miles into another fierce set of countermeasures. Almost nothing left of this column. Nearly 30 of their 43 vehicles destroyed. An Mi-24 attack helicopter downed. and Russian forces retreated, 40 miles to the southeast, where other Ukrainian units had continued to pound them. Pray for the forces of Ukraine. Pray for someone in Russia to put a bullet into Putin's head, because that's the only way this war is going to end, because he doesn't care if he's losing, and he doesn't care if he kills all the kids. I'll be right back, America. Stay tuned. Welcome back, America. I will get back to callers in the next hour. However, I'm joined by former Senator Jim Talent. Did you make a President Zelensky's speech yesterday to the Congress?
Well, it was stirring. It was an example of leadership. And, you know, the Ukrainians' heroic effort here, has, I think, changed the map, if you will, or changed the strategic situation. But Zelensky's got a huge, obviously a huge problem here, because I think it's pretty clear what Putin is doing. I should say Zelensky has a huge decision to make, because I think what Putin is now doing is keeping the Ukrainians tied down around Kyiv to the extent he can, while the major effort is in the south and the southeast, where he's wreaking as much destruction as he can with a view towards changing the facts on the ground so he can get the best negotiated deal possible. And that's what Zelensky's got to decide now, is how much is he willing to give up in order to get a ceasefire?
Ten hours ago, the French foreign minister said Russia is only pretending to negotiate. Do you think they're for real?
Yeah, I do, because I'm acting on the assumption that Putin is not reasonable, but is rational. And he cannot accomplish what he set out to accomplish. So the best case scenario for him would be some kind of an agreement where Ukraine says is not going to join NATO. That's pretty much already there. And he is able to emerge with authority over Donbass and possibly some kind of land bridge to Crimea. Then he withdraws, declares victory, and focuses on stabilizing his regime at home and wearing down the Western sanctions over time.
That would be rational. What is happening, though, Jim Talent, according to Reuters, Russia getting bogged down. According to the New York Times, Russian troop death have climbed to 7,000 in 20 days, with 10 to 14,000 injured, which is we lost 7,000 Marines on Iwo Jima in 34 days against a Japanese army dug in and prepared for 6 years, and 7,000 Russian troops just goes to their generalship. Meanwhile, Ukraine mounts counteroffensive to drive Russians back from Kiev and other key cities. Can Putin lose this?
Well, I think anything is possible at this point, and I think it's up to Zelensky and the Ukrainians to decide whether they want to fight it out, whether they have the ability to drive the Russians back and force them out without any kind of an agreement. And I think we need to support whatever he decides to do. And in the meantime, we need to supply him with whatever he needs, whether that's fighters, integrated air defenses, whatever it is. That's our policy. That's what we should be doing. And we should not be engaging American forces. But as I said, I think that the best Putin can hope for right now is an agreement that Ukraine's not going to join NATO, and then some kind of ceasefire that leaves him in some position of control over Donbass. I think that's what he's aiming for.
Now, in terms of these MiG-29s, it just seems to me that the opposition to them, the Ukrainians can't fly them. What are they going to do? The symbolism of it has become immense. And President Biden, infirm and out of touch, does not seem to understand the symbolism involved with the MiGs.
We have a policy, which is to support them, give them whatever arms they need. We ought to be following the policy. I wonder why we don't give them F-16s.
To me, what we did, Jerry Hendricks, our friend, pointed out to me, during the Neutrality Act days, before World War II, we would drag planes up to the Canadian border and leave them parked, and the Canadians would come over and grab them and fly them to England. That's how we got around the Neutrality Act when FDR was president.
We can do it, It's just the Biden administration, seems to me, is afraid to follow its own policy.
All right.
I agree. We don't get American forces involved.
Ever.
But it's not escalatory to follow the policy that you establish at the beginning of the conflict. Okay? And yet they seem to be so afraid that it would be escalatory. It's not. So we ought to be supplying the Ukrainians with whatever they want, and we ought to be supporting them and not pressuring them to accept a deal that they don't want.
Jim Talon, I've been listening to Andrew Roberts' Churchill biography last night. We're in 1938 and 39. This is 1938 and 39. This is it. And Neville Chamberlain has come back and assumed the body form of Joe Biden because he thinks he's being a leader. Just like Neville used to write to his sisters, I'm doing a good job and Winston won't leave me alone. Biden thinks he's doing a good job. Will anyone tell him the truth?
I think I agree with you that he thinks he's doing a good job. In terms of telling the truth, their truth in this instance is what got us into this situation. And how can I say that I think they're capable of absorbing the truth? Well, at the same time as Russia's doing this, we're engaged in this kabuki dance with the Russians and the Iranians.
You know where I'm going with Leader McConnell next hour. What in the world are we thinking about?
The Obama administration, and that's what we have. I mean, Tom Cotton's right. We have the Obama administration back, at least as regards this. They think they can build a stable security construct in the Middle East with Iran as a partner. It's a strategic mistake. It will not work. It doesn't really matter what the terms of the agreement are. And all we're going to do is empower Iranian aggression and alienate the countries that are our friends.
Jim Talent, you're always a breath of fresh air. Follow him at Twitter, at Jim Talent, from the Bipartisan Policy Center, senior fellow, former senator. Always a pleasure. Mitch McConnell's coming up next hour, America, after Garrity the Indispensable and more of your calls. Stay tuned. I want to remind you that our sponsor is AndrewandTodd.com. There with Sierra Pacific, they lend you money to refinance your house or buy a home or help your son or daughter become investors in real estate by becoming a non-occupying co-borrower. They help senior citizens with reverse mortgage. They help veterans with no money down mortgages. They help you refinance. So if you need to get money out of your house or you need a whole new house, go to AndrewandTodd.com or call them at 888-1172. Morning, Glory America. Happy St. Patrick's Day. I'm Hugh Hewitt on the West Coast, headed back to the Beltway tomorrow, joined by Garrity the Indispensable. Jim is a Beltway guy as well, but he's from the world of the New Jersey Jets fans. And Jets fans will be disappointed Deshaun Watson is not coming to the Jets because there are lots of massage parlors near Jets land.
Hugh, we have the world's best Mormon sixth grader at quarterback.
Okay, perfectly
fine with Zach Wilson, who looks like the kid on the Disney Channel.
I must say, I wanted to preempt your attack on Cleveland. I was warned. Unlike President Biden, I believe in preemptive action to prevent hostile strikes. And I was warned you might be bringing up Deshaun Watson, who cannot come to Cleveland, or we will be the butt of every joke. Correctly. I mean, Jim, let's just talk football for one second. You don't know anything about it. You're a Jets fan. Would you touch this guy?
I wouldn't hit you, Hugh. I actually feel sympathy. As much as I enjoy teasing you, Cleveland is a city full of diehard fans. They have suffered almost, actually longer than Jets fans, because you guys don't have any Lombardi trophies. But you guys deserve, you had a team abandon you. Cleveland fans deserve better. And it looked like they were on the right path. Yeah, they had a not-so-great season last year.
Baker was banged up. Yeah, he's banged up.
I'm not even a huge fan of Baker Mayfield, but this idea of just openly flirting to get Deshaun Watson, when you know at minimum he's going to be suspended for a couple of games and he's got all this baggage, you know, this is like some Shakespearean Game of Thrones stuff. Just feels like this epic betrayal story of a guy who said, that message he sent to the fans yesterday actually made me feel bad for Baker Mayfield.
Well, the Browns front office has inexplicably bollocks this up beyond that. They're back to the Browns of the 0-16 era. And the tough, smart, accountable is their mantra, and apparently unethical. There are 23 complaints across three states. What don't we know about this guy? Don't get me going. Let's talk instead about Zelensky. What'd you make of the address yesterday?
Powerful. Just a tour de force. The video was heartbreaking. I know lots of people who shed tears upon seeing it. I was glad to not be Joe Biden, because we all knew Joe Biden was still going to have to say, "We hear you, we're with you, we feel you. No, we cannot impose a no-fly zone, because that starts a shooting war between us and Russia." And Zelensky played every note perfectly. Now, it looks like they're getting the S-300s. It looks like they're getting all kinds of weapons and stuff like that. So, you know, it wasn't, you know, a complete denial. But Biden is, I knew Zelensky was going to offer a very powerful message. Congress is not in the business of doing things that are wise but unpopular. Congress likes to do things that are popular whether or not they're wise, which is why I think the pressure to try to attempt a no-fly zone is only going to build day by day.
Now, I don't believe we'll ever do that. I do think we ought to give him the MiG-29s. I think we eventually will, because Joe Biden does the right thing 3 weeks late. That's him. He's like Neville Chamberlain. He does the right thing after 3 weeks. Yesterday, he went to the East Room. He said two things of note.
I think he is a war criminal.
Will you be meeting with him?
Okay, calling Biden or Putin a war criminal may not get him diplomacy points, but he's an old guy. This is the one that just makes me roll my eyes. Cut number 8.
So we established a new civil rights cause of action for those whose intimate images were shared on the public screen. How many times have you heard? I bet everybody knows somebody somewhere along the line that in an intimate relationship, what happened was the guy takes a revealing picture of his naked friend or whatever in a compromising position and then literally, in a sense, blackmails or mortifies that person.
All right. So, Jim, I do know Eric Greitens, so that counts, I guess. But do you know anyone who's been blackmailed? For the president said everybody knows somebody. I actually don't, other than Eric Greitens.
You know, if they have, they have not chosen to share that unfortunate turn of events with me. I don't want to hear 79-year-olds using the term naked or compromising positions. One of the contrast, I don't want to spend a lot of time hitting Biden at a time when we're in this international crisis, and I think Biden's doing the best he can. I think we're just seeing that this is the best Biden can do. He does trip over his words. No, it's not a stutter. His thoughts kind of meander. He's kind of got this jokey, back-slapping tone. He's not Winston Churchill. He's not a guy who you're just going to...
No, in fact, I've made the argument. I've been listening to Andrew Roberts' biography of Churchill. He's Neville Chamberlain. He thinks he's doing a good job. Neville Chamberlain thought he was doing a good job.
So the other thing is also how much, you know, Biden will say, he sounds like John Wayne, you know, when I'm in office, Putin's not... Days of intimidating Europe, Eastern Europe are over, and... You know, Biden says, for old days, I'd take you out behind the woodshed, you know, all that stuff. I think in the end, Joe Biden is a typical Democrat with dovish instincts who wants to avoid conflict. And, you know, look, some of this probably relates to Joe Biden. Some of this relates to him voting for the Iraq War. You know, Biden wants to say, okay, how can I not let this escalate any further? And in the meantime, Russia is bombing theaters full of children. Escalate. Like, how can we be worried? Oh, if we send the MiGs, it might provoke Russia. Provoke them to do what?
That's it.
You want to fight with NATO? Fine. We'll give you a fight with NATO. You're going to lose, Russia.
All right. And so tell me what you think about an Iran-Russia-U.S. nuclear deal. I cannot even believe this is on the table.
Look, the primary objective of the Biden administration's policy on Iran is to not concede that the Obama administration was wrong about Iran. This is the most fascinatingly, frustratingly stubborn approach to this issue at all, and a complete blindness to what are actual priorities here. Because right now, we better keep Russia involved in our negotiations with Iran, otherwise they might do something terrible. Like what? Invade Ukraine? Kill kids?
What
is your order of priorities here? And it's just been baffling, you know.
There is no way under the, you know, we have active prosecutions of Iranian agents who are attempting to have a kill list in the United States.
Are they trying to kill John Bolton? Wasn't that the last report we've seen?
That was the one that surfaced by Tom Rogan in the Washington Examiner. And I don't talk about this much because you don't want to. But they are trying to kill Americans. And they fired missiles into Erbil. And we're still at the table with them dealing with the Russian. Jim, it's like reading about 1938 and Chamberlain and 1939 and Chamberlain.
Yeah, and in the end, I realize this is a challenging set of circumstances. As your listeners heard, I don't want to do it a no-fly zone. And no, there's no such thing as a limited no-fly zone. I don't want to put NATO forces on the ground in Ukraine. I think the best approach we can do right now is, one, arm the Ukrainians to the teeth. Again, if we didn't want to transfer the MiGs because there was some avionics on it that needed to be taken out before we could give them because we didn't want to end up in the hands of the Russians, fine. If there's some issue, if we're not sure that, you know, these planes are the best, you know, the most as effective as the Ukrainians think, fine. But if we're not doing it because we're afraid we're going to provoke Russia or we're going to exacerbate Russia, that's a terrible decision. That's giving, letting Putin decide what we can and can't do. The second thing is we should be basically being very clear, because I wrote in yesterday's Morning Jolt, I think the idea of Russia using a tactical nuclear weapon is not unthinkable. Not that it's likely. I'm just saying we've gone from like a 0% of that percent chance of that happening to a 1, 2, or 3% chance, because the war is going badly for Putin. And he cannot come back from all this with nothing. He needs to demonstrate. Putin is going to be, we're in this odd situation where the worse it gets for Putin, the more desperate he gets, and the more terrible outcomes, you know, become realistic options here.
Now, I got to run two headlines by you. First of all, as Russia digs in, what's the risk of nuclear war? It's not zero. That's the New York Times. Richard Haass, who's a smart guy, he was the head of P at State Department, good guy. Enough with all the talk about war criminals and reparations. The focus for now and immediate future needs to be on stopping the carnage and on negotiating peace. We can then turn to other things. As the good book says in Simon and Garfunkel Sing, A Time for Every Purpose Under Heaven, he then corrected himself, apologies to the birds and Pete Singers. No excuses, brain cramp. That said, the point still holds. What do you think about both? Nothing matters except resupplying the Ukrainians right now. That's what the focus is.
Yeah, you know, the first one, like, again, as I mentioned, I don't think Russia is seriously considering using a nuclear weapon and tactical, which is, you know, relatively smaller yield. But the idea of some point, like, in Putin's mind, he could well see this as his Hiroshima and Nagasaki. I'm going to do some sort of awesome demonstration of my power that is so devastating that the Ukrainians have no choice but to accept surrender on my terms. I think that's scenario. I'm not saying it's going to happen. I'm not saying it's certain to happen. I'm just saying we can't rule out that possibility at this point.
Do you know there are planes all over Russia, the G5s headed to the Urals? It's really weird right now.
Yeah, I know. And as for, you know, reparations and stuff, look, you know, if we declare a ceasefire now, we might just get the same thing 2-3 years from now.
That's it. It is time to defeat the Russian forces on the ground by equipping the Ukrainian armed forces to do so. Jim Garrity. Follow him on Twitter at Jim Garrity. Follow him. Go get the Morning Jolt at nationalreview.com. Come right back after the break. I'm Hugh Hewitt. Back, America. Happy St. Patrick's Day to you and to my guest, GOP Senate leader Mitch McConnell from the great state of Kentucky. Good morning, Leader McConnell. Happy St. Patrick's Day.
Well, then, same to you. The McConnells came from County Down up near Belfast a long time ago.
That's where the Hewitts came from, St. Field in Belfast, outside of Ulster. So there may be some common ground there. Senator, what did you make of the Zelensky address yesterday?
Well, inspiring once again. What a brave leader the Ukrainians have. They've been an inspiration to the whole world. And as I said yesterday, I appreciate the president's efforts, but he needs to step up his game. There's a lot more we need to do, and we need to do it quickly. I've been trying to get this administration to properly arm the Ukrainians for months, because you could see this coming. I mean, this was not a surprise attack. He'd been mobilizing and putting soldiers on the border for quite a while. No surprise. And I'll say one good thing that came out of it, you. Vladimir Putin has unified NATO and transformed German politics, something no American president's ever been able to do.
You know, the only leader of the West who has not increased their awareness of the threat posed by the trio of tyrants in Iran, Russia, and China is Joe Biden. And I want to ask you, can you believe we're about to do a deal with Iran and Russia, with Russia being the mediator, with a terrorist regime that's trying to kill Americans in the country as we speak?
It's mind-boggling. And, of course, it'll be a bad deal. It'll have absolutely nothing to do with all of Iran's collateral activities, supporting terrorism all over the Middle East. Yeah, I mean, President Trump was right to get out of that deal. And I think there's no question the administration is anxious to make a deal. And look, you know, that unsettles our Sunni Arab allies, like the Emiratis and the Saudis, see us cozying up to Iran once again. So it has an adverse impact on our allies, the Sunni Arab states, and Israel's not going to be too keen about on this either.
It strikes me, Leader McConnell, that President Biden's eagerness and the eagerness of his team, led by Tony Blinken and Wendy Sherman, for any deal with Iran has compromised his willingness to step up in Ukraine because he needs Russia to do the deal with Iran. Ben Rhodes, you know, the Metternich of MSNBC, has been out there this yesterday blasting Americans as oligarchs, the Koch brothers. That's how far left this gang has gone. Do you think fear of losing the Iran deal is holding the president back from supporting Zelensky?
Oh, I think it could be a factor. Mainly, I think they have incorrectly concluded that Putin may actually want a war with NATO. That's insane. He can't handle Ukraine. He's not going to try to go to war with us. And so they have, in effect, you allowed Putin to define what we do. If they're afraid, for example, to okay the Poles' efforts to send MiGs into Ukraine, because why? They think it may provoke Vladimir Putin. It could well be that they're anxious, their desire to get into a bad deal with Iran has an adverse impact on this. I'll tell you, in my view, what gave Putin the green light was our precipitous withdrawal from Afghanistan last August. It was a bold display of cowardice and an indication that America was in retreat.
Well, I have been telling people all morning, I've been listening to Andrew Roberts' magnificent biography of Churchill before I go to bed. Last night, I listened for 2 hours because it's 1938, 1939. The Brits believed in appeasement. They actually embraced it, the conservatives of Great Britain under Neville Chamberlain. And right now, President Biden just strikes me as Neville Chamberlain writing to his sisters. He thinks he's doing a good job on Ukraine, Mr. Leader. You've known him a long time. Can anyone get through to him? He's not doing a good job. He's in the line that leads directly back to Neville Chamberlain.
Well, you know what Bob Gates said about Joe Biden and foreign policy, that he's been wrong on every major occasion. So, you know, I think this is the Joe Biden that I knew in the Senate. Good guy, but increasingly wrong, or almost always wrong, on these kinds of issues.
And surrounded by weak-kneed people. Even if Ben Rhodes is on the outside cheering on attacks on the Koch brothers as oligarchs, it's just astonishing. Well, now I want to turn to Judge Brown Jackson. I think she's going to be confirmed rather easily. I put the over-under at 65. I think she's qualified, but the questions matter. Will someone ask her about Article 2, Section 2, which is the treaty power? That is vested in your body, Leader McConnell, not in the State Department. They cannot continue to do JCPOAs and pretend like they can't go to the Senate with it. That legitimate question for a nominee to answer?
Well, I don't think there's any question she would not answer it. She would claim that that's an issue that might come before her, and so I think she will not answer it. I'll tell you, I asked her something I thought she could and should have answered. I said, Ruth Bader Ginsburg and Justice Breyer have been quite open and express themselves on the issue of court packing and term limits for Supreme Court justices, which is clearly unconstitutional. This is about the institution of the Supreme Court. Why don't you tell us how you feel about that? She wouldn't even answer that. So I think all these nominees, whether they're from Republican presidents or Democratic presidents, since Justice Ginsburg's confirmation, have basically refused to answer any question. And I don't think she'll address the treaty power either, Hugh.
All right. Now, there is one thing I think she can address. I don't know if you talked to her about it. When your colleague Chuck Schumer held a press conference in front of the Supreme Court and threatened the court, and the United States Senate sent a brief in threatening the court, that is a court matter about which the court, it's not going to come before the court because it's a letter. Would she talk about the appropriateness of threatening the Supreme Court by the Senate?
Well, my guess is our Judiciary Committee members will ask her about all these things, but she won't respond. Look, I mean, the liberal groups who are so excited about her nomination are the very ones that have been calling for packing the court or term limits on the court. So, in a sense, that's her base. So that's the double reason why she won't answer questions about attacks on the court, which I think would be appropriate for her to comment on.
I do, too. I hope it's repeatedly brought up. Leader McConnell, I have in my hands one damn thing after another, the memoirs of Attorney General William Barr. I'm a big Barr fan, and I'm up to the part where they are nominating David Souter. And, you know, that is probably the biggest mistake in judicial politics of the last 50 years, because it was Edith Jones or David Souter. Kent Starr was in third place. And George H.W. Bush, a great American, was afraid of a confirmation battle. Why is it that Republicans are afraid of them and Democrats aren't? That they nominate reliable, hardcore liberal judges like Judge Brown Jackson, and no one doubts she's going to rule with the left. And we get all jumpy, we being Republicans, about nominating good, solid conservative originalists.
Yeah, I think I think it's pretty safe to say no Democratic president had an unpleasant surprise by any of their Supreme Court nominees, and we've had that on a number of occasions. I don't think we made any of those mistakes during the Trump administration. I think confirming judges with a simple majority helps get the right kind of judges on the bench. And but, yeah, if you look back, Nixon appointed Blackmun, Bush 41, Souter, they made a mistake.
And Bill Barr points this out, that Dick Thornburg and Boyden Gray recommended David Souter. He and Mike Luttig and Vice President Quayle and others supported Edith Jones. What would be the difference in the United States if Edith Jones had not been the nominee leader?
Enormous difference. Edith Jones is still on the Fifth Circuit doing her thing.
Yes, she is.
Terrific. You know, others that were considered at the time, Larry Silberman, great D.C. Circuit Court judge, would have also been an all-star.
What's ahead? Do you just expect a repeat of the Kagan hearings, a repeat of the Sotomayor hearings, where there are difficult questions answered? Republicans do not engage in vicious personal attacks based on rumor, innuendo, and lies, and the judges confirm comfortably. Is that what you expect?
Yeah, look, I'm not interested in what somebody may have written in Justice Jackson's high school yearbook, and I think this will not be anything close to what they did to Clarence Thomas and Brett Kavanaugh.
I agree. I also think that Democrats hope that some Republicans overplay their hand, because they're going to get blown out in November on a variety of reasons, and they're praying that the Republicans make a misstep here. Does the conference know that?
Yeah, we do. We do. And I think Judge Jackson will be treated respectfully. I think the questions will be appropriate. And I think you're right. I think she's highly likely to be confirmed with very few Republican votes because of her philosophy, not anything else.
But the Republicans, in their questioning, will not be using the tactics of the left. I mean, I will disown those. Have you just talked to them bluntly? We don't do that?
Yeah. I mean, I'm confident that's not going to happen. None of our people are interested in doing that.
All right. Last question is on gas prices, Mr. Leader. The president is right. Putin has added a premium to our gas, but it's 10%. It's not 100% of what's happened at the pump. Does anyone on the other side of the aisle really believe gas prices are the result of Putin's invasion?
No, it's laughable. The invasion's gone on for 3 weeks. The spike in gas prices began at the beginning of the year. And whatever Putin added is a tiny percent of what you're paying at the pump.
And is there anything that the president could do to lower that gas price, in your opinion, that he has not done?
American energy production We were a net exporter of oil and gas. As late as 2019, they have basically shut down domestic production on public lands, canceled the Keystone Pipeline, and they're begging Venezuela, for example, to increase production while they won't allow it here at home.
It's astonishing. So the very last question, Senator, are you confident of getting the Senate back under Republican control in November?
I think we have an excellent chance. There are a lot more of us up than them, 20 of us and only 14 of them. But the president's in terrible shape. I think the chances of his improving dramatically before November are not good. And this kind of midterm election is always a referendum on how you feel about the incumbent president.
I agree with that. Leader McConnell, continue to keep the focus. Thank you for joining me this morning. Good luck in trying to get some answers out of Judge Brown Jackson. I appreciate the time, Leader.
Thank you.
Don't go anywhere, America. More of your phone calls, 1-800-520-1234. I think the over-under 65. People don't like her judicial philosophy. She's going to vote with Kagan and Sotomayor. But Judge Brown Jackson's going to get confirmed. There's not going to be a political story here. That's just the reality of it. Let's stay focused on the fact that the treaty power is there. And if there's a deal with Iran, it should be torn up and will be torn up by the next Republican president. Stay tuned.
Three-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.